And joining me right now here on the phone line to go over the latest on UCF football, who lost their bowl game last week to Georgia Tech, and we'll get into the NFL. Scott does a great job with multiple publications, including Black and Gold Banneret. He's my good friend Kyle Nash. Kyle, how you doing today?
An honor, joy, and privilege to jump in, Mark Moses. Hey, let me be among the last to wish you a happy holiday season and among the first to wish you a happy new year, brother.
Hey, happy holidays. Let's start with UCF. I think it was last Thursday or Friday. I don't even know what day it is. Yeah, okay. It was Friday. They're there at the Gasparilla Bowl. They've been in this game multiple times. They're taking on Georgia Tech. What happened exactly?
Well, listen, if you're looking for what the formula was and what happened and what Georgia Tech took advantage of, simply put, they figured out later, hey, maybe we should run on these guys just like everybody else who had success against UCF did. And that's exactly what happened. And it's unfortunate, too, because for the one big touchdown pass they got, the Yellow Jackets really at that point kind of, I felt like, had the UCF defense guessing at that point on. But, you know, that being said, Addison Williams, in his first year coaching the Knights, they've got a lot of other players coming in to try to fill these gaps that they were dealing with in the linebacker core. And that was the biggest problem. Georgia Tech knew, and listen, give Brinke credit as a former UCF offensive coordinator in his past, right? He saw on the film, listen, if you could get past the defensive tackles, generally speaking, later in the game, once the defensive ends are tired, you're going to have success. That's exactly what we saw. And the thing that might have made it more disappointing for UCF fans, Mark, is the fact that the offense looked so good jumping out the gate, putting up two quick TDs. And then suddenly Colton Boomer's missing chip shot kicks, and then it all just went to Hades from there.
It really did. You're probably there in the press box there at the Buccaneers Stadium. Like, hey, this is going to be good. UCF's going to win this bowl game. This will be great. Winning record going into next year. Was there just silence? What happened after a while?
I mean, there was copious use of the delete button. The article I was writing for the Black and Gold Banneret.
Yeah.
But with all that in mind, there was a bit of shock and confusion. But as that fourth quarter kind of settled in, like, yeah, we've seen this animal before. And then, you know, not seeing John Rhys Plumlee finish his final game as a Knight because of injury also added a little bit of a sting for UCF fans alike there, too. So, I mean, all of that that part of it is a little depressing for sure. But, you know, if you're going to stick to the positives, you know, making a bowl game the first year in the Big 12, doing better than what the expectation was. Now, granted, I called them winning six games, but there were plenty of people who had them lower than that and finishing the regular season. And, hey, they did better than the remaining incumbents into the Big 12. So all of that, oh yeah, and then not to mention Gus Malzahn doing record-breaking things again already in recruiting. There's plenty to hang the hat on, but as far as this individual game, yeah, not the best one to make the drive for, certainly.
No, it was not. It's very disappointing the way that game ended, and just especially after the start, as you know. I don't know. Was this season, and this is a tough question, was this season a success in your eyes?
It was on how you define it. For me, they met the expectation in the W column. I had them winning six games. The part that I think where they were the most successful is rebuilding the offensive line as effectively as they did and the way they played without having necessarily a secure, quote, starting six for any period of time. You know, I say six because they were often rotating the center, right? So with all of that going on, they had a lot of success. R.J. Harvey coming back is something that's uplifting. Javon Baker is something that's uplifting. But as far as the success of this year, getting to a point where you could compete in the trenches, where you were supposed to be regularly dominated because of size, which at times they were. Let's not act like it was perfect. But the fact that they got to a point where it could push teams around just as much with the right strategy or the right scheme, I really feel like they outperformed a lot of expectations in certain areas. It didn't always just come out on the scoreboard, Mark. I mean, how many close games did UCF? A single pointer in Lubbock, that heartbreaker they broke, they lost rather to Baylor. Those games would have really, I think, put an entire spin on the season at large. And if they come out, you know, winning those eight games, you know, finishing with a winning record instead of what they have in the 6-7, I think that would be a little bit better. But knowing the UCF fan base and all their passion, which one must allegedly appreciate, they must also understand that UCF fans are always going to find something to complain about. That's why they raise so much money trying to kill I Love You Baby being played at the FBC Morgan Stadium bounce house.
All right. They're moving on from John Rhys Plumlee.
Yes.
Is there a quarterback on this roster? Are they hitting the transfer portal? What's going on here? Because I know this is going to be the question here for the next couple of months.
And rightly so. I mean, personally, I feel like the odds on favorite is that the guy isn't in the building yet, but I don't think going to Timmy McClain is necessarily a bad thing if you have an O-line that's rebuilt correctly. That's the biggest problem for me. Can Herb Hand, their offensive line coach, help Coach Malzahn bring in a new third year in a row, mind you, bring in a new O-line that could perform just as good as this year's? Because if it looks more like 2 years ago, you might have some problems even with R.J. Harvey in the backfield. But with this offense being a run-dominant entity, Timmy McClain could put himself in a position to hit big bombs down the field just like John Rhys Plumlee did to Javon Baker. There's an opportunity for this offense to be successful. That being said, if you're going to make that conversion to be a run-based team, the big thing that has to happen, Mark, you've got to fix that linebacker core. So for me, I know that because he's the most popular guy and he's the prettiest guy on the team and the quarterback, you know, that's the focus, and rightly so. For me, I think the biggest question to be answered is getting that linebacker core right, getting that front seven right. And if they keep Timmy McClain, that's a viable football team.
We're here with Kyle Nash, Black and Gold Banneret. All right, they end the season, 6 wins, lose the bowl game. You brought this up in the open, though. We had signing day last week, early signing day. Best class ever? I mean, are you excited? What do you think from the recruiting front right now?
Listen, you got to love what Gus Malzahn's doing. And while on the field, sometimes fans get frustrated by certain things. The point is this: for all the talk of fire Malzahn, here's the thing. When he does go out the door, you know you're going to have a bunch of solid recruits. And if a guy who is in waiting, whether it be, you know, just speculating, a Herb Hand, or if any of either of the coordinators get the job, I don't have any reason to believe Darren Hinshaw couldn't eventually be the head coach in waiting if he doesn't get a job before Gus leaves. Like, that's a situation where you could have a pen of players built up, a coaching transition, while keeping a lot of the players that you recruited, right? That's the kind of situation. Think Notre Dame, right? Sure, there were some guys that may have followed the coach when he moved to, with Brian Kelly, when he moved to LSU. Yeah. But Coach Freeman kept a lot of those guys, and they still had good success.
We're going to find out. Look, best recruiting class ever for the school. And what was it? I think second overall in the Big 12, the new Big 12. You go into the offseason. Are there high expectations for next year? Because me personally, and this is a discussion we're going to have moving forward, there's all these brand new teams that are going to be joining the Big 12. So it might be another year where you win 6 or 7 games. How about you?
That's possible. And by the same token, it could also be a year where you are doing better. I hate to sit on the fence with this one, but there's so many moving parts here, Mark Moses. The quarterback situation, the O-line rebuild, the linebacker situation. You lost at least one big DB in Corey Thornton to transfer, but you've got a lot of awesome young players. Let's see what they do, right? And then with the new teams coming in. Yeah, I have no idea the state or, for example, of what Colorado will be right now. You know, they had a big O-line prospect that publicly declared, and then just as publicly disappeared 2 weeks later. So all of that, all of these other teams that were former Pac-12 teams that are now getting kind of bounced out with the dissolving of the Pac-12 such that it was, there's a lot of turmoil here. I know we're supposed to, as sports media guys, ask these questions and have all these answers that are all just silly guesses. But me, I'm not in the business of guessing yet. Got to see this. There could be things that go great for UCF, and there could be things that go wrong. You know, the portal giveth and taketh away, right?
Well, don't worry. We have 9 months to promote it and preview it. Don't worry. Okay, we really do, dude. Basketball, something you cover as well for UCF. I'm excited. This conference, especially, I know the Kansas game is coming up in January. I know this is gonna be a gauntlet, right? But are you excited to go there to the stadium and see all these brand new teams coming up here in 24?
Yeah, listen, the surroundings at the Addition Financial Arena will be different than they already were, and we've already seen it some nights even with the women's side of the game there, too. It's just a whole other presence when you get some of these big basketball schools coming into that gym, and that's going to be a sight to behold. Sure, some of the scores might be a bit lopsided, as, you know, breaking into Big 12 basketball is no simple feat. But I also think they're going to outperform on both sides some of the expectations. I believe they were picked to be last in both men's and women's, and I think they're going to do better on both sides.
I can't wait for that Kansas game. I'm not going to lie to you. That's bucket list. All right, let's go over this. I know I'm going to sound like a brat when I say this with Kyle Nash. College basketball. All right, I've seen Duke and Carolina play. I'm thinking the Blue Bloods. Seen Duke and Carolina play. I gotta think of this. I've never seen Kansas. I've never seen Kentucky. Have you seen any of those teams play?
I have not. But listen, my ultimate experience was Michigan coming to town, and then Houston, who now went with the UCF to the Big 12. So that's the extent of my super big blue blood college basketball experience. Although was it the Leathernecks came to town, right? Or is it the Roughnecks? I forget.
Leathernecks. Yeah. Yes, that's right. That was bucket list. I've seen them many times. Lose horribly, but I've seen them. You think about some of these Big 12 teams, you know, moving forward. I mean, Kansas, and you see like Iowa State, and you go, I mean, Kansas State always makes the tournament. West Virginia is always competitive. Like, there's so many. Oklahoma State, all these teams are competitive. Texas, okay, yeah, this year only. And then I'm trying to think who else. You know, look, Texas Tech's had good teams. Baylor's gone and won the championship. Man, honestly, I feel bad for Johnny Dawkins. I won't lie to you. Because this is one of the toughest conferences in college basketball. And look, they signed up for this, so we're going to find out. All right, let's switch gears. We're here with Kyle Nash. Did the Jaguars even show up to Tampa? Like, what happened in that Buccaneers game?
You know, I pictured a slot sort, Mark Moses. If you saw my prediction on Jaguar Report, I expected turnovers to be what solved for this game. What really surprised me is how the Bucs subdued Josh Allen and company, keep Baker Mayfield safe so he could do his thing and continue his streak of solid play. Listen, props to Baker Mayfield for what he's doing. We may actually see an NFC South team that wins the division with a winning record. I'm super stoked, he said sarcastically. But listen, I also wrote this as well in my 'Twas the Night Before Christmas Jaguar Edition poem that I did also on Jaguar Report. Bing! Even with this loss, they're still likely to nab 10 wins, right? Look at this schedule. If they lose to the Carolina Panthers, Mark Moses, I can say honestly, they don't belong in the playoffs. And that's what you have upcoming here on New Year's Eve at Everbank there. And then after that, they go over to Nashville to battle the Titans. On top of that, Mark Moses, the Colts let the fraud cops beat them, and the Texans drew the Browns this past week and lost that game to a Browns team that is still irrevocably tough for no true good reason that I can fathom other than Christmas miracles. Yes, it's not too late for holiday puns, Mark Moses. But I say all that to say this. As injured as the Jags have been on the offensive line, that too means that Trevor's been dinged up more than at any point, I would say, in his entire football career, let alone just with the Jaguars, right? So I think that's certainly a factor, and they got to account for that. This is something me and my co-host from the Duval Dive, Travis Holmes, talked about at length, that this O-line was kind of not forgotten, but made to let ride in the offseason. And now you're starting to see kind of the dings and dents and the blemishes that come from doing that. So, I mean, I say all of the above to say, I'm not here to tell you that you should be happy about what happened on Christmas Eve in Tampa, but what I can tell you is the chances of them still hitting the postseason and hosting a game at Everbank in the postseason are still incredibly high, and the Colts and Texans helped make that happen.
All right, let's say they win the division. Then what? Then they get Joe Flacco and the Browns? Or they get Buffalo?
That's what it's looking like right now, yeah.
Or maybe it's Buffalo? Look, 4 weeks ago, this team's vying for the number one seed in the AFC, And now it's just been a sinking ship. Like, even if they win the division, is this season a success? If they just stumble to the finish line? I don't know with 2 weeks to go. How about you?
Well, certainly based on the expectation. I mean, listen, I've had people on the Soon in the Game podcast try to tell me that the Jags were a 13-win team. If that was your expectation, how on earth are you happy with them crossing the finish line at 9 or 10 wins with a division title? That's holding pat in season. And Mark Moses, the biggest problem was that they hit the gauntlet, that is the AFC North, or at least three of those teams, albeit with backup quarterbacks, but still incredibly talented football teams. And that just really – that they never really recovered, Mark, from that Browns game.
No.
Where they had all the injuries – or excuse me, not the Browns. I'm sorry, the Bengals on Monday night. They really never recovered from that. And that they're still reeling from all the injuries they suffered and then having to play after that the Ravens and Browns, two very tough football teams. So I think it all kind of stems from that.
It's not good. It's not. Who is the best team in the AFC right now?
Well, it's obviously the Baltimore Ravens. And you got to love the delicious irony, Mark Moses, that with his, let's just say, prolonged negotiation process, how bitter it may or may not have been, how much it may have been just headlines or just, you know, as I thought it was, posturing the entire time from two sides of an equation that understand the business side of the sport, I think the irony that the Baltimore Ravens were at least allegedly worried about Lamar Demetrius Jackson's injury history are now successful because he is the only quarterback in the AFC North that has started at the beginning of the season.
I mean, you think about that. 2 weeks ago in the regular season, I know, knock on wood, 2 weeks ago, who have been the most durable quarterbacks? Tua and Lamar Jackson. I did not see that coming, Kyle. Did you?
I did not. Yeah, the irony that you threw Tua in there as well is completely huge. And though he's not an MVP candidate, you got to love what he's doing with this team. Ironically, it's his receivers and Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill that have been nicked up as late. And still, the Finns are doing cool things on the football field. Do I have any reason to believe they beat the Ravens this weekend? No, let's pump the brakes. But you got to enjoy what the Miami Dolphins are doing. And putting themselves in a position to be an AFC East favorite is a good season to me.
Yeah, it is. How big of a win was that for the Dolphins beating the Cowboys?
Man, listen, the reverberations felt in both conferences with that one, my good friend. The Cowboys kind of cowboyed, I'm not going to lie, but to finish that job against a team that at least has a semi-legitimate defense, I mean, that's the one gripe against the Dolphins, is they can't beat anybody with a slightly legitimate defense until now. Now, granted, you could argue that the Finns and the Cowboys are two of those, you know, we beat all the weak teams kind of teams, the fake contenders, if you will, the pretenders, if you're so inclined there, too. But this is still a big deal to at least make the Ravens and Dolphins game coming up relevant on paper.
Before I let you go, I ask this to everyone because it's the $50,000 question. If you were my Bears, would you bring back Justin Fields or would you draft Caleb Williams?
At this point, it's not a mark on either team that I say this, but I think both sides of that equation need a reboot. Right. And Justin Fields has dealt with a lot of unfortunate, let's say, issues with the Bears. His fault, their fault, whoever's fault. He needs a change in scenery, and the Bears need to reboot. I think the best scenario, because we're all pretty certain Eberflus and that coaching staff are going to get canned. If that is, in fact, the plan to make Justin Fields now change coordinators at this point in his career to try to uplift him, nobody wins in this scenario. I think the Bears should reboot, draft likely Caleb Williams, as you cited, and take all the assets they could get from Fields over and above what they have from the Panthers from the previous offseason and build an up-and-coming team that can threaten in a power vacuum NFC North and do some damage. Because I'll say this about the Lions. Though they're doing awesome this year, I'm not sure how sustainable Dan Campbell is there, and they can at least battle for that division. And I'm not sure how sustainable the Packers are. LaFleur's been doing interesting things with Love, but I don't love what Jordan's going to be next year.
All right, what if I do this? I know. I'm driving everyone crazy. This is all I think about all day.
Hey, I'm having fun with it, Mark Moses. Roll them dice.
What about I keep Fields. I bring in a better coach. I get Marvin Harrison Jr. to put him with DJ Moore. And then my other pick in the top 10, I take the best defensive player. Isn't that a playoff team in the NFC? Like, come on.
I mean, you could certainly sneak into the wild card that way. It's just a matter of will Fields adjust well to another coaching change as such. And if you're able to achieve all that, which to your point, all the assets that the Panthers gave and all of the above and all the assets that their unfortunate record will hand them this season, no offense.
I know.
A playoff scenario potentially in the NFC. I can't rule that out.
All right. Of all those quarterbacks drafted in 21, who's playing the best? Because you had Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance. Who's the best one right now of all the quarterbacks?
I mean, you've got to kind of say, I mean, you would say Trevor on the surface, but Fields is second, right?
Look, you're right. This has to end after a while because my brain can't do it. This has to end. It's like a bad relationship. So after a while, you two have to break up. I understand. I get it. But thank you. It was funny, I'm watching Panthers, Packers, and I'm like, uh-oh, what's going on here? Oh, no, Panthers are coming back. This isn't good. Come on. Right. Come on. And then New England beat the Broncos. You're like, all right, one more week, and we get the number one pick. But honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. I think you might get three number ones for that number one pick. The way the quarterback position, how everyone keeps getting injured, I think the Bears could get three number ones for the number one pick, Kyle. And I'm putting that out there.
I'll say this: it's with what's gone on with that Panthers trade alone. To act like that's a silly eventuality, one you have to accept it as an opportunity. I cannot rule it out. I can't.
I know it's crazy. I love it. By the way, I could talk NFL draft all day. Okay, Kyle Nash, my man. Thank you so much for coming on. Always appreciate it. And have a great holidays. And I'll talk to you next year. All right.
An honor, joy, and privilege, Mark Moses. A happy new year once again to you and your people there. But until next time, my friend, class dismissed.